Hey everyone, welcome to The Geek Awakens, where the talk is geekier than trying really hard not to fall off of Tabitha's stool again.
Who would bring that up?
Joining me tonight is Lydia.
Yeah, you're mean.
And Matt.
Hello.
And I am Mitch. Of course I was going to bring that up again. I thought about bringing it up off camera, but then I was like, no, we're good.
You know, I was sitting here thinking, you brought this chair out on purpose. Like, you didn't bring the chair I normally sit in. You made me sit on this thing again on purpose.
I mean, to be fair, you could have stolen Matt's chair. Well, I guess he got here first, but either which way. Before we get too into it, though, just a quick shout out to our partner in crime, Tabitha, who went on vacation and ended up in the hospital. So
that sucks.
That happens.
That's not a good vacation.
No. But anyway, we've got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. The first thing that I want to talk about is actually it's going on this Sunday, October 28th. At the Firefighters Lake Club, it is the first annual Firefighters Comic Con. It's from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets are $5 at the door. 12 and under are free. And if you come in cosplay, it's $3. Then from 6 to 9, Titan Games is hosting an RPG tournament. They're going to have local comic and game vendors. Food and drinks will be available on site. And according to their Facebook page, as of yesterday, the vendor space was almost full. So, I mean, it should be a good time. And just going off of some of the people that they that they've announced so far, I'm seeing a lot of similar people that were there at MicroCon.
Oh, cool.
So it'll be kind of cool because I think and we might have some kind of presence there, but I think it's going to be more of a spectator thing for me this time. So it'll be cool, especially with some of those people that I really didn't get a chance to check out because we were busy actually doing stuff. So cool. First thing that we're, well, I guess.
Second thing?
Third thing? I don't know. Whatever.
Numbers are hard.
Yes, they are.
A, 2, and D.
1, 5, A, 7, something. I don't know.
Let's stop while we're behind. So, Wonder Woman 1984 was supposed to come out on next year in November. Yep, November 2019, November 1st. They have pushed that back to June 5th of 2020. The only reason that they're giving is that it's a better time for Wonder Woman because they want to keep it. So what they're saying right now is they want to keep it as a summer blockbuster like the first one was. Anyway, but yeah, so they're wanting to keep it as a summer blockbuster as opposed to moving it to a different time of year. I don't think that matters.
Not for Wonder Woman, I don't. Which really just makes me sad because then we just have to wait, what,
that much
seven months longer?
Yeah.
Which I would. Already ready for the second Wonder Woman movie, like when I walked out of the first one, but to have to wait longer. I mean, I kind of get it. I do. But at the same time.
Yeah. Let's look at some other properties too. Like, you know, like the first Deadpool movie was in February and it broke all kinds of records. Black Panther, also in February, also broke all kinds of records. I think that especially when it comes to superhero movies, we are past the point where it has to be a summer blockbuster.
Oh, I completely agree. I think that's true. Like, if it's going to be a good superhero movie and it's going to pull the crowds in, it doesn't matter when you release it. Yes, Deadpool and Black Panther are prime examples of how that doesn't make any difference.
Right. It's not like, you know, the majority of the people who are going to see Wonder Woman only go to the theaters between the months of May and August. that's not a thing.
No, that's not how it works.
I feel like there's got to be another reason, and they're just using that as an excuse.
You know,
I did see something about how it was. There was some mention in one of the articles about that, about how something that was coming out a couple of weeks ahead of Wonder Woman in November.
The Joker movie is coming out in October of 2019.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Move that back.
I don't think that's going to make any difference.
Yeah.
It's not going to affect Wonder Woman. I
feel like that's two completely different fan bases, even though it's same universe, basically. It's...
You'll get some overlap. You know, especially, like, well, like, most of us who... We see most of the superhero movies that come out regardless. But yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming
there's
from,
though. There's still going to be... people that lean more towards one or the other. That's not going to make that big of a difference.
Yeah. The girls, you know, like, the young girls who, you know, are look up to Wonder Woman or whatever, they're not seeing Joaquin Phoenix as Joker. That ain't happening.
No.
I hope not.
Right. But if you were already, like, if you were super excited to see a movie on November 1st, 2019, well, you're in luck because the Charlie's Angels reboot is... set to, they moved that up, and that took Wonder Woman's spot.
That took Wonder Woman? Wow.
Yeah.
That makes me even more sad.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a thing. So, anyway, so, so Matt, what do you think the chances are that we'll be able to see Wonder Woman 1984 when it finally does come out with MoviePass?
Probably not a very good chance at all. MoviePass just continues to
die
a very slow and painful death.
More like, why won't you die?
Right. Right, exactly. It's, you know, the thing is, it's gotten so bad now that I was lost on the explanation on the parent company here, but they go by HMNY, or also known as Helios and Matheson. I don't quite get that connection, but whatever. It was referred to both ways in the article. But that company is getting ready to spin off MoviePass into its own company. They only bought MoviePass in December of 2017. And it's already such a drain and such a waste on their company, like, as a whole, that they're hoping that if they spin it off, that it won't drag the rest of the company into the depths of everything, which is kind of funny. Like, I mean, they actually said that, like, the reason, like, the perception of the failings that MoviePass has is the prime reason why they're, like, spinning this off. They want to separate themselves from this negative presence of MoviePass.
Which, if they own MoviePass, why not just shut it down at that point?
Just kill it. Let it be dead. If it's that big of a deal, just...
Then why bother with it?
One thing that I saw in that article that you shared with us was how they're going to kind of, like, break it down, too. Like, it's going to be MoviePass Entertainment Holdings that's going to have MoviePass. MoviePass Films, which is their film production arm.
Right.
MoviePass makes movies? Okay. Sure.
I'm not sure how. They don't have any money.
Right. Probably with, like, somebody's, like, camera, phone. But
we got a GoPro.
Which any film's better than MoviePass can make.
MoviePass Ventures, which looks to co-acquire and distribute completed films. And also, MoviePhone is included in MoviePass Entertainment Holdings. Yes, MoviePhone is still a thing, apparently.
Right? Didn't even know that still existed.
No.
You gonna try and call it right now? Get the numbers, get the times for the local movie?
I'm Googling it.
God, I thought that thing was long gone.
Right? I think we all did. Yeah. Honestly, if it's that negative of a drain on your corporate image, just
shut it down.
I mean, we've been, like, how many times have we talked about this now and how, like, awful, like, MoviePass is and how it's not getting any better. I don't know. The other thing is, too, though, that the article pointed out, which I think was thought was kind of interesting, was that Helios and Matheson, when, like, right about the time they announced this attempt to spin off MoviePass, it was also announced that they're under investigation by the New York Attorney General's office for fraud concerns, which include that they misled company investors.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, like, they needed any more negative press, they got it.
Yeah, that's not good for them.
No, that's not good for them.
I feel like they should have jumped ship a long time ago, and now it's too late. They're going down.
No double dipping on bad news. Let's get rid of MoviePass quick.
So I think I might have. Well, it's. I think it's like for a customer service phone number. Okay. I got to their website, but I don't think that you can actually call Movie Phone. But it's called Movie Phone.
That's disappointing.
Hello and welcome to Movie Phone. It's been a while since I had called that. Was that even kind of close?
Maybe I don't even remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of want to ask Google, but I kind of don't because I'm afraid what'll happen.
Right. Maybe after we're done recording, see what happens. So, a couple things to talk about from some friends of ours. The first one is Vault Comics yesterday announced a new line or a new imprint that is going to focus on middle grade and young adult stories. It's called Myriad. It will the first set of titles are going to be released in 2019, and then specific titles we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks. But it's going to have a from their press release, it's going to have an array of new and as well as established creative voices looking to make a strong impact on the, you know, middle grade and young adult scene.
Very cool.
So it's going to have a variety of different sizes and formats, including original graphic novels, one-shot graphic novellas, prestige format graphic albums, as well as serialized graphic stories packaged in formats beyond the traditional 22-page floppy comic book.
Okay.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like the name, too.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Let's see. Vault Editor-in-Chief Adrian Wassel said that, quote, the idea is simple. Tell stories just as daring, just as beloved, and just as relevant as those coming out of Vault, but for an even wider audience. These are hilarious, heartbreaking, jaw-dropping stories for everyone. And then Vault's Vice President of Branding and Design, Tim Daniel, also went on to say that young readers want to make their own heroes, so our heroes must be equally reflective in all of us, representing who we are broadly and as individuals. So,
nice.
Yeah. So that's going to be, I'm going to be interested to see, you know, what kind of titles mm-hmm. are included in this line. Just because, I mean, you know, from the stuff that we've gotten to read from Vault before, I've really enjoyed.
Right.
And to kind of see, like, them not take a completely new direction, but to kind of...
Well, it'll also be kind of interesting to look at that in conjunction with the stuff that we've read from Lionforge, mm-hmm. which has, like, a YA, like, imprint as well.
Yeah.
So,
speaking of Lionforge, got to read a couple of things that came out yesterday. Rolled and Told came out with issue 2, which Rolled and Told, we've talked about it a couple of times, but it, you know, it mixes comic books, role-playing games, you know, kind of a, you know, kind of a magazine feel to it. And so, like, what I really liked about this, and I didn't read it in detail.
Yeah.
But from what I was reading, like, you know, somebody like me who is not a role-player, you know, role-playing game person at all. I've never played Dungeons & Dragons, you know, nothing like that. But I felt like it was kind of walking me through everything to where I could play it.
Yeah, it was a good setup.
Yeah. And also, I mean, like, some other articles, like, there was a, you know, big thing about, you know, like, trolls and stuff, you know, like, to kind of get me more familiarized with, you know, this particular game as well as role-playing games as a whole. So... but yeah, so I mean, if you are into RPGs at all, definitely check out Rolled and Told. Also, I got caught up on Incidentals. Incidentals number 13 came out yesterday as well.
Lucky number 13,
right? this was kind of an interesting arc that I, you know, chose to get caught up on because there, you know, this is something that we've seen lots of other times before. Mm. You know, of you know, the darker side of Hollywood and, you know, like cults and sacrifices and things like that, yep. You know. But then when you're also talking with, you know, a line like Catalyst Prime, you're also then dealing with supernatural other things, you know. But it's, and number 13, like, it set up a fantastic cliffhanger for what I'm assuming is the conclusion to this arc.
Nice.
And I can't wait for it. It's an interesting new team dynamic. The original three are gone, and replaced by other characters that we have seen leading up to this. And, you know, I do kind of miss those original three, especially Nuke. Nuke was fantastic.
He was, yes.
And so, like, I'm still kind of wondering if this is the last that we've seen of them, or if they're just kind of taking a break for right now. Also, one other thing that I did find funny, which I don't know how far you had gotten with incidentals.
Not far enough.
did you ever meet the detective?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So he is part of the team now.
Okay.
But, like, everybody else has, like, a costume, you know? Like, he doesn't.
Because he's a detective.
Yeah.
So he's just very... Yeah, that makes total sense.
So it's like it's interesting, but it's pretty funny at the same time. but yeah, so definitely do yourself a favor. Check out Incidentals. Get caught up on that. Also, we got an update from Asia Dye and Viamber Miller, who were part of Project Aegis, which we got to hang out with them at LodgeCon last year. Or it was still this year. It was earlier.
It was this year.
Man, that feels like a lifetime ago. they are fully funded on Kickstarter for the first issue of Project Aegis. They were funded 141%.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. So they got their first issue of the comic printed, which they said was a huge milestone. If you didn't get on the Kickstarter campaign, their online web store is open.
Cool.
It is, you can find it at projectaegis.bigcartel.com, and that's Project AEGIS.
Excellent.
So they also have prints, stickers, a bunch of other stuff on available in store. I did kind of check that out as well, you know, last night, just was kind of poking around. But also, if you're in the area, they've got a couple of conventions that they're going to be at. The first one's going to be Chicago Pop Culture Con in St. Charles, Illinois, November 24th and 25th. And then at Anime Zap in East Peoria, Illinois, January 4th through the 6th. So, yeah, so if you're going to either of those, be sure to check them out. Cool people to talk to. Fantastic art. So... let's go ahead and get started with Gut Reaction. And we're going to start off tonight, Matt, talking about Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean is not dead.
It's not dead yet?
No, not dead yet. As much as we may hope that they're done with it, it's not. but it might be getting better. Disney has met with the writers, Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who wrote both the Deadpool movies, Zombieland, and the sequel, in order to write a reboot of Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, Jerry Bruckheimer is still set to produce, and there's nothing in regards to which stars might or might not return, but... with those writers attached, I'm going to go solid. Oh my God. I can't. Solid thumb sideways, because I still don't think we need this, even with those writers attached.
Even with those writers attached, I don't think that we need this. I'm going thumbs down on this. I've never been a big fan of Pirates of the Caribbean in the first place. But, I mean, the last one just came out, what, last year? I feel like it's too soon for a reboot already. And I know that's hypocritical of me, you know, as a, you know, big Spider-Man fan, you know, like, and he's been rebooted how many times, but you know, I feel like it's too soon for a reboot. And also, if there's talk of any of the original cast returning, then how much of a reboot is it?
Reboot, right?
So I don't need it. Lydia,
I'm also gonna go with Matt on the thumb sideways. I actually do like the first three Pirates movies. I feel like they kind of needed to stop there. But, yeah, how do you reboot something like that quick? And if you're going to have real, like, the original casted
thing? Yeah.
There's too many things that don't make sense. Yeah. But the writers sound like a good idea.
Yeah. And not to go back, but like one thing that I did forget to mention too, like even with Jerry Bruckheimer still producing, like I feel like with reboots, like you need to have as much new
blood
as possible, but whatever.
How does it really qualify as a reboot then?
Right.
Yeah.
Guillermo del Toro is producing, or he's directing, I should say, a stop motion adaptation of Pinocchio for Netflix. He's going to co-direct alongside Mark Gustafsson, who served as the animation director for Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Okay.
So, I never saw Fantastic Mr. Fox, but like the previews or whatever that I saw for it, I always wanted to. I just never got around to it. I'm totally down for this. Yes, thumbs up. Especially because Del Toro is probably going to go to a little bit of a darker side of the Pinocchio story, which is always fun. So, so definitely thumbs up, Lydia.
So, before I answer, stop motion like Nightmare Before Christmas stop motion? Or
yes.
That's what I'm assuming, yes. Okay.
Then, yeah, that sounds cool. Thumbs up, because everything you said.
Matt.
Yeah, Del Toro, his visual style, I love. And the idea of tackling Pinocchio, and again, like you said, the darker tone that he will probably take with it, thumbs up. Absolutely.
Matt, we're going to go Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Courage, you might be getting more courage back. Not liquid courage.
Well, that's sad.
Right? So the creator of Courage, John R. Dilworth, posted on Facebook earlier this week that he and his company are, quote-unquote, expecting to begin development of a prequel of Courage the Cowardly Dog. Right now, it's tentatively titled Before Courage, and it's specifically going to be set for the Boomerang Network, not Cartoon Network. this will be Courage's first appearance since 2013. I loved Courage when it was on. I still, to this day, like, if I see it, I'm going to stop and watch it. I'm always game for more of this, so I'm going to say thumbs up.
First off, I didn't realize that Courage the Cowardly Dog ended its original run in 2002.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot newer than that, but surprise, surprise. I'm going to thumb sideways on this one, only because the whole expecting to begin development could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I feel like he may have said this a little bit too early. But if it does happen, cool. I mean, I never watched it, but you know, I still recognize its popularity. So, thumb sideways for now, Lydia.
Thumb sideways. I also loved Courage Cowardly Dog. But I'm a little on the fence about some things that you just said. With it being, like, a before Courage, does that mean he's got to be a puppy? Which, that...
It worked for a pup named Scooby-Doo.
It did. So, there's that.
I'm still in on Eustace, so...
But my worry is that it's going to go similar art style to, like, the newer Scooby-Doo series. And if that happens, I'm not going to be able to watch it.
Mm.
So...
You've got some major beef with that new Scooby-Doo
series.
It
is horrible! Let me tell you, it's so freaking horrible! Anyway.
So bad.
Lydia, let's talk about a Clueless reboot.
So, Tabitha's probably rolling over in her hospital bed right now. But apparently, the next in the line of reboots of all these old movies is going to be Clueless. There's not much known about it at the moment. It's going to be produced by Tracy Oliver, and writer Marquita Robinson is working on the script. And that's about all that's known about it. They don't know if it's going to be a reimagining of the characters, or if it's just going to be a completely new concept, or what. Well, really up in the air. We don't need this. I'm speaking on Tabitha's behalf, too. We don't need this. Thumbs down.
Matt.
I never saw the show. I didn't see the movie, which I know the movie came first. I get that. Anyway. I don't know. No, I don't think so. Thumbs down.
Do we need it? No. The movie was fantastic. The television show, much less fantastic.
Apparently there was also a musical at some point. I didn't know about that.
Really? I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Would I probably watch this? Depending on who they cast. So I'm gonna go thumb sideways. It's not an awful idea, but it's borderline awful. Borderline.
It's another reboot. Do we really need another reboot?
Well, that's...
Get some original ideas. Come on.
That's the age we live in right now, though. Right.
I don't like this age. Mm. Can we go back a few years?
Where we had original ideas?
Yeah.
So, or even pawned off reboots as original ideas? Even that was okay.
So, speaking of unoriginal ideas, a third-party developer who had a blessing from the Vatican has released a free app. It's called Follow JC Go. JC, obviously, Jesus Christ. Right. But instead of catching Pokemon, you roam around your area or whatever to find Catholic saints and other biblical characters to join their evangelicalization team. Instead of capturing them, you answer some of their questions and then they will join your team.
So if you answer wrong, they just don't join you?
Apparently.
Like they don't like you?
Apparently. I looked for this last night. I found it. It's not in English. So that is the only reason why I'm giving this one a thumbs down. If I was able to understand it, I probably would have played it just for fun. Lydia.
I can't even think about this concept without laughing. Like,
I mean,
it helps when you said that you don't, like, capture them, because I just imagined, like, grabbing these saints and shoving them in, like, a ball. So that helped.
Instead of throwing a Pokeball, do you throw a chalice? And I'm going to hell.
I'll be right there with you.
Yeah, it's...
thumb sideways. Why not? Maybe there's somebody out there that needs this.
Matt.
I got nothing. Thumbs down.
All right, so going from Jesus to a crying devil, Matt.
So,
like you said, we're going to hell.
So, Devil May Cry 5 is not set to release until March 8th of 2019. But on the Capcom Japan website, you can buy 3 ultra-limited edition versions of the game. The price on these is insane. It features 3 of the playable characters, Nero, Dante, and V. V's version is roughly $5,300. Nero's version is $6,600. And Dante's version is a whopping $8,000. Now, I should say that they do come with jackets, leather jackets, genuine leather, that are sized to match the scale of the characters and are battle damaged. But $8,000? Or $6,600? Or $5,300? I mean, that is definitely the ultra limited edition. Even with the jackets, I'm going to go thumbs down for the price alone.
And plus the fact that they are battle damage. Like the the Nero one, for example. One of the sleeves is torn off of the at the elbow. I'm not paying $6,600 for a jacket that's not even an entire jacket. And if it's designed to fit the character, it might not even fit me. Right. No! All the thumbs down. Lydia.
It sounded cool until you got to the price. Like, even the battle-worn jackets, whatever, if you're adequately sized, that could be a cosplayer's dream right there. But not for that much money. No! Thumbs down.
No, you can get a jacket at Goodwill for...
And distress it yourself. For like $6.
Yes. So, Urban Legends is teaming with Marvel Comics to bring a ongoing exclusive album series featuring variant covers for select collector editions of some of the record label's most legendary releases. So, the among the first wave, you're getting Iron Man standing behind the cracked glass of 50 Cent's 2003 debut, Get Rich or Die Tryin'. The Punisher replicating LL Cool J's stance on the 1990 album Mama Said Knock You Out, and Iron Man Dueling Maestro for GZA's second studio album Liquid Swords. It's kind of a callback to the variant covers that they did, that Marvel did back in 2015. Yeah, thumbs up. I will probably not buy any of these, especially not 50 Cent, because I can't. But
it can't be that expensive.
What's the world's cheapest concert?
50 Cent featuring Nickelback.
Is that for both of us?
Yes.
I'll take it. But yeah, totally. Thumbs up. Lydia.
It sounds really cool, even though you guys made it really bad.
We tried.
Thumbs up.
Matt.
I didn't buy any of the variant covers when they came out. I probably won't buy the albums, but I love the artwork and the collaboration style on these, so I'm going thumbs up.
Matt, Quiet Place.
So, A Quiet Place is getting a sequel. And it is now actually going to be written by the actor-director John Krasinski. I guess he had an idea, a small idea, for the sequel after the first one, but wasn't able to build it into a full like movie idea. So he told the studio to move ahead with other writers. I guess he's developed an idea that has grown. It will work. So he is now penning the sequel, which is set to open in May 15th of 2020. I still haven't seen the first one, but I'm willing to give it a shot because it was fairly well received in most cases. So, I mean, I'll go thumbs up just for the idea that, you know, he's got this idea and he's going to see if he can make it work.
I also haven't seen A Quiet Place, but yeah, it... I know that everyone loved it, and I still really want to see it. So yeah, so the idea of a sequel to it already, I'm in. Thumbs up. Lydia.
Same. Haven't seen it, but what you guys said, thumbs up.
So, and I should have, I should have paired this story with that Devil May Cry story. So, there's a okay, so Brick is a company that's known for really, 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 really high-end accessories. And they have a PS4 controller with gold buttons topped with conflict-free diamonds. The entire controller is also coated in 24-karat gold, and it'll cost you $13,995. There's a cheaper version, where...
Is it made with rhinestones?
Where the only, button that is, the only gold top of, you know, diamond button is the PS button, and then the rest are made from the usual material. That one is going to cost you $8,495. I'm going thumbs down on this because even with the cheaper version, I mean, that for the more expensive, I feel like you're getting way more for your money. I feel like the $8,500 one is a ripoff, but that's just me. Lydia.
So my mind automatically went to the logical part here because since I am a gamer... That sounds like it would really hurt your thumb. So, price aside, that already turned me off. So, thumbs down.
Matt.
Yeah, not even paired with that $8,000 Devil May Cry 5 Ultra Limited Edition would that be worth the money. So, thumbs down.
I can't afford to eat it all this year, but I got this really cool controller and jacket that doesn't even fit me.
And the sleeves torn off.
The sleeves torn off.
So, all right, so that concludes Gut Reaction. Matt, let's actually still talk about PlayStation a little bit and the what's going on with their name changes.
Yeah, well, not PlayStation's name changes, yeah, but the players.
Right.
So ever since PS4 has been in existence, gamers have been asking to get the ability to change gamer tags. You know, it's one of those things, you set it up and people after a while are like, this is a really dumb name. I wish I'd picked something better.
Yeah, grow it.
Right.
Yeah.
You will have your chance, thanks to PlayStation, coming in the firmware update of 6.1, which is now going into beta testing. You'll be able to change your gamer tag. There are some stipulations to it, And that's kind of what's throwing people right now. I'm just going to read the information from the documentation just because it says it better than I could. So the first possibility is that not all games and applications for the PS4, PS3, PS Vita, and other PlayStation systems support the online ID change feature. Next, if you change your online ID, you may lose access to content, including paid for content, that you have acquired for your games, including content like add-ons and virtual currency. You may lose your progress within games, including game-saved data, leaderboard data, and progress toward trophies. Parts of your games and applications might not function properly, both online and offline. And finally, your previous online IDs may remain visible to you and other players in some places.
So basically what they're saying is, we're making this so you can do it, but none of it works properly.
Right. I feel like I just read the stipulations for a drug commercial.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, these are possible side effects if you do choose to use this drug.
So clear up your watery eyes, but all these other things are going to happen right to you instead.
And it's going to be free the first time, but if you want to change it more than once, it's going to cost you 9.99 euros, which I didn't do the conversion on that. PlayStation Plus members will be able to change it for 4.99 euros.
Still, that seems like way more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah. 11.36 in United States currency.
Okay. So it'll probably end up being like 11.99 or something like that here. But yeah, you're finally going to have the option, but it might not work in most or some or maybe all places.
And
there's no guarantees.
Screw up most of your games and...
Yeah, and so much is, you know, add-on content anymore for games that you have to purchase after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
That's a big risk to lose stuff that you've already paid for.
Right. Well, yeah, and exactly. That's, you know, that's exactly right. And, shoot. Forgot what I was going to say. Why is that a thing today?
It is.
But
I think if you really want to change your gamer tag that much, just add another profile to the PlayStation and play on that one.
Well, and
if you want to have your other stuff back, then go play on that one for a minute so you have your titles.
Right. There were a couple of Twitter reactions in the article I read that was like, oh, I guess I'm not that upset about being Happy Sprinkles 84 anymore. Sorry, you know, whatever their gamer tag was. It's like, it's really not that bad because... I'll deal with it if I can keep everything I've got. It's just...
Well, it seems like to me that what PlayStation did was like, oh, hey, people really want this. Okay, well, let's make this happen. And kind of a similar thing that we had talked about, I don't remember if it was last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, but like just like the gaming industry as a whole, you know, it's like they've got a target date to release something and it's like, oh, well, we'll fix everything later.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like this is a similar situation, like, oh, hey, guys, here's this, and it's not going to work now, but maybe later.
Right. And with PlayStation, I also, too, kind of feel like it's a little bit of, like, fine, quit your bitching, we'll give it to you. It's probably not going to work the way you want, but whatever. Yeah. So, to that point, again, like, just don't do it until it's ready.
Right. Exactly.
So.
All right. So, Gen Con has... has extended its contract or whatever with the city of Indianapolis to keep Gen Con there through 2023. The city is planning an expansion of the Indiana Convention Center as well as two new convention hotels. And that's part of the reason why Gen Con is sticking with Indy. The Capital Improvement Board of Indianapolis announced a $120 million publicly funded building connected by Skywalk to the convention center, and that's going to house a 50,000 square foot ballroom as well as new meeting space.
Wow.
And then the expansion is also going to be connected to two Hilton brand hotels.
Okay.
So, but yeah, which is obviously it's a great move, especially for the city of Indianapolis. For this year, Gen Con reported 223,326 turnstile visits. And then for unique attendees, Gen Con reported more than 60,000.
Nice.
So definitely it makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
For Indianapolis. And Gen Con, like, they just... It's just such a huge convention.
Yeah, and this is one of those things, like you said, it's good for Indianapolis. I mean, this is definitely one of those, like, Indianapolis sees the revenue mm-hmm. from this event and is like, well, you know, what we put into this new building, we'll get back, you know, and not just in Gen Con, but other conventions that they'll be able to host, but specifically Gen Con.
Right, for sure.
They'll allow Gen Con to grow, too. Like, it probably wants to, but might not have had the space.
Mm-hmm. Right. So... Matt, let's talk about Nike signing an esports star.
They have offered a contract, an endorsement deal, for the first esports star. It is Chinese League of Legends player Jian Zhao. I probably butchered the name. So he goes by Uzi. He and his team, the Royal Never Give Up team, has, like, they've won awards, won tournaments. Zhao is recognized as one of the best League of Legends players in the world and recently won a gold medal at the Asian Games in Jakarta. But Nike is working with Zhao, LeBron James, and the Chinese actor Bai Jingting to promote the Dribble And campaign. Which started, you know, was it last year or so, when LeBron was told to shut up and dribble by a politician. And so they're moving on with this to make this campaign bigger. It was announced by Zhao sporting a t-shirt that says Dribble and Carry, which in League of Legends, carry refers to when a single player carries or pushes their team towards victory. So, I don't know. It's cool that Nike is expanding. I mean, a lot of these esports are getting bigger name endorsements. Zhao and his team have already had deals with both Mercedes and KFC. When I saw that in the article, that was my first thought. I was like, oh, they get a KFC sponsorship, but we don't? Okay, oh, that's gosh. Cool.
I think we have to step our game up just a little bit.
Right.
Our video games?
But, yeah. Expanding and growing, esports are becoming more and more popular.
Which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
It is cool. I am going to say, though, like, when you were kind of describing the whole Dribble and Carry, you know, campaign or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or Dribble And campaign, like, I kind of was reminded of, like, those No Fear shirts. Do you remember those? But, so, we talked last week about how Iron Fist got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Netflix decided to go ahead and cancel Luke Cage as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. the reason that they gave was, quote, creative differences. But, all that said... the writer's room for season 3 was already assembled. They did say, and you know, and in the writer's room, I mean, they were already working on scripts. So Deadline reported that Netflix wanted a shorter 10-episode season as opposed to the 13 episodes that had already been planned.
Okay.
So I don't know if Netflix was just kind of like, it's either 10 or nothing.
Wow, that seems kind of harsh.
Yeah.
But there's also the idea that maybe Disney's streaming service could have factored into it.
Okay.
Which, if that's the case, you would think that Jessica Jones, Daredevil, and The Punisher would also get the axe. Defenders as well, but obviously if you're getting rid of all of them,
right.
then...
You kind of include that one.
Right. But also, and something that we kind of talked about last week as well... the two shows could also be merged together for a Heroes for Hire series on Netflix. I mean, I feel like, I still kind of feel like that's more wishful thinking than anything, but...
Yeah, sadly, I think it is wishful thinking, but I think it would be a good idea. I don't see why that wouldn't work.
Right.
But,
I don't know. I mean, especially if production costs are a factor, which with Netflix, it's probably not.
Because let's be honest.
Right.
Right.
But let's say if production costs are a factor, merging those two shows together for Heroes for Hire, which makes sense anyway because that is an established team, you know, you can cut down on some of the excess characters that you've had in both of those shows.
Right.
You know, but whatevskies.
I don't know. Netflix has been on a binge lately of their own of canceling shows, so maybe that's just part of this. I don't know. You know, they've gotten garbage for a long time about not canceling shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can't, was it Orange is the New Black?
Right.
It's done after season 7, and now these two MCU shows.
Netflix needs to chill.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
I'm sorry.
I'm not saying to do it, but like I feel like if Tabitha were here tonight. But that is interesting, though, that you mentioned that because, I mean, obviously after 7 seasons, I mean, Orange probably needs to tie things up anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Orange is the New Black, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, even though season 1 was awful, I mean, it had a better response for season 2. Mm. But, like, those are 3 well-known properties that Netflix has, and yet the Boss Baby gets to live on.
That's true. That's depressing, actually.
I mean, there are a ton of Netflix originals that, like, if you were to go on Netflix right now, like, there would be so many that you don't even know that that's a thing, you know? But right. These other well-known properties are the ones that are getting the axe. That's just, that's interesting to me.
It is.
And I do wonder if that is something bigger.
I feel like there has to be something bigger going on behind the scenes for that kind of stuff. I assume we'll probably find out at some point. But I don't know. I'm with the rest of the internet. I want to know now.
Right.
Why? I just want answers.
Google can't help you now.
No.
But what might be able to help you is a new burger from Burger King.
Help you go to the bathroom, maybe.
It'll help you have nightmares. That's kind of been proven. What was it, a couple of years ago? 2015,
mm-hmm.
Burger King offered the Halloween Whopper with a black colored bun and A1 sauce. This year, they're stepping up their game. The Nightmare Burger was available starting on Monday for $6.39. It is a quarter pound burger, a crispy chicken filet, American cheese, bacon, mayo, and onions on a glazed green sesame seed bun.
And how did they get that green color?
Oh, all sorts of food coloring.
Mm.
Also, it says all natural coloring from watermelons.
Right.
Watermelons?
Yes. Watermelons.
Hey, watermelons are red on the inside.
So, did they just, like, this is grind one of those down times the rind?
The outside that counts.
Now I'm questioning if it tastes like watermelon.
See, that's what I first thought too. I was like, but I bet it doesn't taste like watermelons. You're probably right. Like it's in the rind, obviously.
Yeah.
But. Tastes like nightmare fuel. So if that wasn't enough, Burger King went ahead and teamed with the Florida Sleep and Neurodiagnostic Services Incorporated to conduct a study, basically to prove that this burger causes nightmares. They studied more than 100 participants for 10 nights who ate the sandwich before they went to sleep. They tracked heart rate, brain activity, and breathing to determine if and when vivid dreams occurred. The study's leading doctor, Dr. Jose Gabriel Medina, who is a somnologist, a specialist in sleep disorders, stated that based on previous sleep studies, they have been able to determine that as much as 4% of the given population has nightmares per night. But after eating the Nightmare King, the data obtained from the study indicated that the incidence of nightmares increased by 3.5 times. You're 3.5 more times likely to have a nightmare after eating this burger and going to sleep.
Even though that's still a small percentage, but still, like, why would you willingly eat something
that's going to give you nightmares?
That might give you nightmares. Like,
see, this is where the twisted dark mat comes out, and I'm like, I kind of want to try this and test it out, see what happens.
Yeah, I'm really glad that wasn't on the testing block this week.
I mean, I
buy one of those and bring it in. Try that.
I mean, I kind of want to, but like, first off, I wouldn't want the whole thing because that sounds like a lot. I mean,
cut it in pieces.
But is that enough to give you a nightmare?
I don't know. Looking at it gives me nightmares. Bread should not be that color. If bread's that color, you should throw it away.
That is very true.
That is true.
I can't disagree with that. I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a shot this week and I'll report back.
Listen, if you have nightmares.
That would be awful.
Also, maybe just don't eat at Burger King before you go to sleep.
Or just don't eat at Burger King.
I mean, there's a good chance that just eating at Burger King could cause nightmares, so.
Exactly. They didn't test any other burgers, did they? I mean, how is this solid evidence that they didn't test it?
Well, there is actually evidence that from these sleep studies that based on the proteins, so the beef and the chicken and the combination of the cheese, leads to an increased disruption in REM cycles. So, which I think, I want to say that there's been studies in the past about, like, you know, proteins before sleep, you know, causing sleep issues anyways. So the combination of these would just up their game.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
No, thank you. Combine that with, like, a milkshake that causes sleep paralysis.
Oh. Is that a thing?
Oh, you've never experienced what? That? Oh,
a
yeah.
A milkshake that causes
sleep? No, it's not really.
Oh. I made that. Okay, I was yeah. like...
No, I just made that.
I thought you meant that with, like, the night... The milkshake is a real thing. I know the nightmare... The sleep paralysis is.
Oh. So, anyway...
No, that's horrible.
Lydia, let's talk about some popular Halloween costumes.
So, surprise, surprise, it keeps topping the list of most popular things in everywhere. The most popular Halloween costume, pretty much anywhere, is Fortnite.
You can't see me doing this, but I'm flossing at the celebration of this. Okay, I'm not.
You're not.
No, you're not. But, yeah. So...
I mean, at least it's not Harley Quinn.
Yeah. It's not Harley Quinn.
The silver lining here. I'm trying.
My niece would be highly disappointed. But, yeah. So, Fortnite tops the list pretty much everywhere. And, overall, I'm sure Tabitha's great dismay, the one immediately following that was Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's always going to be...
He's always
right there, yeah.
But Mitch actually looked up the local standings for this. Fortnite still topped it, followed by a witch, a mermaid, the 1980s, for whatever reason, and an elephant.
I understand the 1980s more than I understand the elephant.
I just want to know how you dress up as an elephant. Like, is it one of those big old blow-up outfits? Also, I got to go way off topic awesome. To this, but...
I mean, I've seen, like, you know, the whole inflatable, like, Halloween costumes are definitely now a thing that they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be an awesome inflatable costume, be an elephant.
That would be pretty cool.
I like how I just do that, like, completely off subject.
like not, now, I want to know how that would work. Costume.
Well, you've got a little less than a week to figure that out.
Yeah. I feel like you would need a second person for that.
Oh, like those horse outfits?
Uh-huh. The old school horse costumes.
Who would want to be the rear end of an elephant, though? You'd have to have a really big butt.
And you wouldn't be able to lie.
You'd never forget.
So, going back to Harley Quinn real quick before we get to our last story for the night... we didn't talk about it, but I did post it earlier today. Did you see that they have announced for the Harley Quinn cartoon on DC Universe that none other than Alan Tudyk is going to play the Joker?
I did, and it kind of kills me just a little bit because it makes me just that much more inclined to maybe actually think about watching it.
Yeah.
Just because of Tudyk.
I would check out the first episode. I'm not going to say that I would watch the whole series. And also to completely derail, have you seen Titans yet?
No, I didn't sign up for DC Universe. Oh. So I want to.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that, so
Titans is it's dark. It's gore, kind of gory at times, but it is really good.
Is it good?
It is really good.
So bad.
So, but yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, Alan Tudyk as the Joker
sounds perfect.
You've got me for at least the first episode. Why not?
Yeah.
So, all right. So our last story of the night. So Dynamite Entertainment and Ian Fleming Publications are going to release a standalone James Bond origin story. That will appear in none other than Playboy.
What?
Yeah.
You know, I probably should be more shocked by this than I am, but
I mean, I guess he does have all the Bond girls, so that kind of makes sense, but
you know, and for what it's worth, like, Playboy for a very, very long time has been a very prestigious place to publish short stories. It really mm-hmm. has. Like, when it comes down to places that, like, short story authors want like to have on their CV, Playboy has for a long time been on that very top of that list. So,
and plus, you know, yeah, and Ian Fleming himself had short stories run in the magazine. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not completely outside of the realm of possibilities. James Bond Origin is written by Jeff Parker and it's drawn by Bob Q. It launched in September. So, I mean, so this is an ongoing. Mm-hmm. Ongoing comic that that Playboy is going to get a you know, a special standalone issue for or oh. story for. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, it makes perfect sense for a publication like Playboy to team with a character like James Bond.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You
know? So anyway, before we get into too much trouble,
too late,
because that never happens.
So, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Geek Awakens. We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, check us out on Facebook and Twitter, where we'll be posting news throughout the week. While you're there, give us some feedback and tell us what cool stuff we're missing out on. Also, Matt and I will be back Monday to review the newest episode of Doctor Who in The Geek Awakens Presents, Traveling the Hooniverse. Finally, be sure to listen to 217radio.com for the best music of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. From all of us at The Geek Awakens, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll be back next week. Everybody, say bye.
Bye.